Greetings, Moonlight citizens. This is your Moonlight King letting you know that this episode of Moonlight Kingdom Reviews will be reviewing none other than the Denis Villeneuve directed Timothée Chalamet Zendaya starring Dune Part 2. That's right, y'all. And it review is coming to you live right here and now on this episode of Moonlight Kingdom Reviews in 3, 2, 1, boom. As you would know by now, most episodes dive into some background on the movie that we will be discussing. And this episode is no different because we are discussing Dune 2, directed by Denis Villeneuve, with a screenplay by Denis Villeneuve and John Spates, based on Dune by Frank Herbert. This movie is Legendary Pictures and WB, I think. It's a joint production thing. And, you know, just like the last one, it stars Timothée Chalamet, Zendaya, Rebecca Ferguson. This is a pretty stacked cast, by the way. Josh Brolin, Austin Butler, Ferenc Pugh, Dave Bautista, Christopher Walken, Lea Seydoux, Charlotte Rampling, Javier Bardem, and more. And let's not forget Stellan Skarsgård, the big old Vladimir Harkin, I think his name is. Yeah, with the score done by Hans Zimmer, the production company behind this movie is Legendary Pictures, and the distributed by Warner Brothers with the release date of March 1, 2024. This was a phenomenal movie. It has a runtime of 160 minutes. You don't really feel that, by the way. You don't feel that sitting in the theater, I'm just saying that much. And with a budget of $190 million, this movie has grossed a total of $704.5 million, making it the highest grossing movie of 2024 as of late. You know, until something comes along that maybe knocks that figure out of the park, this movie, as of late, is the highest grossing movie of 2024. Big success all around, and in better news, due to the widespread, acclaim from critics and audiences alike and the major box office success of the movie, a sequel based on, you know, the book Dune Messiah is in development. So we're going to get a Dune Part 3. And yeah, that's the background we need for that. So yeah, that's all the background you really need. You know who's in it. You know what led to the movie being made, you know, due to the success of the last movie, you know, and how well it did, how much money it made. This what led to the green lighting of Dune Part 2. And, you know, there was initially some worry that they might not get a Part 2 because the movie might underperform, because originally Warner Bros. Wanted to release Dune, like, the same day and time in cinemas as it was in streaming. But, like, you know, the movie did well. You know, that movie, at the time it was released, proved that it wasn't a case of, like, blockbuster fatigue wasn't a thing. This movie, Dune Part 2, and the movie before it proved that blockbuster fatigue wasn't setting in. Bad blockbuster fatigue was setting in. Like, kind of what's going on with superhero movies. It's like, fans aren't with the success of movies like Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 and, you know, The Batman, it shows, like, superhero movie fatigue isn't the issue. Bad superhero movies, that's the issue. Like, that's what people don't like. Anyway, that's enough background. Let's get into the movie itself on this episode of Moonlight Kingdom Reviews. All right, let's get into this. This movie, right out of the gate, man, you know, spoilers, if you haven't seen it, that's on you. I mean, it's May right now, so if you haven't seen it, mid-March, April, May, like, come on, what are you doing, man? This movie is The Matrix meets The American Revolution. That's to sum it all up. Like, right out of the gate, big headline, The Matrix meets American Revolution. I saw this in IMAX, so, like, yeah, the big screen, the music, the sound, the score kicked ass in this movie. It kicked 50 shades of ass in this movie, man, like, especially in an IMAX viewing. The movie follows Paul Atreides in the aftermath of his family being attacked by the Harkonnens and, you know, the Sardaukar, and being wiped out at the behest of the Emperor in collusion with the Baron Harkonnen. So yeah, and he's currently living in the desert with his mother amidst the Fremen people. And he is the, like, struggling to come to terms with the grab, like, he might be the one, you know, the prophesized, you know, one who will lead the Fremen people to, you know, freedom from the Harkonnens and all their horribleness. So yeah. The relationship between Stilgar and Paul in this movie is a lot, like, for reference, Stilgar is Javier Bardem's character. The relationship between the two is a lot like that of Neo and Morpheus, in that, you know, even though Paul doesn't believe in the prophecy of the one, he doesn't believe that he's the guy. No, he's, in his eyes, he's just a regular person. Stilgar believes to the point that he's willing to, like, give his life for it. You know, like, he's willing to bet it all on this dude. He even tells him straight up, like, it doesn't matter that you don't believe. I do. Like, so, yeah, it doesn't matter that you don't believe whether it's real or not. I believe that it's real because it is. You know, like, there's too much evidence for us to be, like, shrugging our heads and not believing any of it. So, yeah. Yeah, so there's this thing going on, and, like, it's not just him who, like, goes through trial and error. His mother does, too, and to become one of the Fremen women, the, not Kwisatz Haderach, not Issan Agaib, not Muad'Dib, the, one of the old ladies, man, she becomes one of those ladies that are part of the tribe, you know, and she's basically, like, the child she's carrying in her womb, like, it talks to her, and, like, Paul can communicate with it. And because he can, like, he has visions, like, he can see into the future, and, like, so can she to an extent, you know, like, I guess, you know, like, I'm not particularly jazzed on, like, the, I'm not particularly full versed in the book or anything. I only know as much as the original Dune, like, what David Lynch, and, you know, what I've been told by a friend of mine, and, well, what I've seen in this movie, like, so there's this process that she has to go through, where she, like, drinks this juice, and if you survive, then, okay, like, it proves that you are everything you say you are. Like, you say, like, he's the one, or he could be the one, then, you know, prove it, you know, because this is a way to prove it. Drink this blue juice, and, you know, if you survive, it prove it. If you die, hey, you're full of crap. And she survived. Thing is, so his mom survives a process to become a reverend mother, but, like, Zendaya, like, you know, Chani, and, like, her side of the Fremen people are fractured. There's, like, a side that believes in the prophecy, and another side that doesn't, and thinks, like, no, the Fremen should free themselves. It should be a Fremen man who like, leads the way. The Fremen should free themselves from oppression, and the belief in the One is just another system of oppression designed to keep them in place. That's why I say this is a lot like The Matrix. There's a theory that the idea of the One was created solely as another measure of control by the machines. So, yeah. The thing is, his mother survives the process to become a Reverend Mother, but Zendaya and her group, they don't believe it's a miracle, even though they thought, like, you know, the whole reason they allowed it to happen were like, ah, whatever, she's not going to survive. It's going to prove once and for all, this is nonsense. There is no the One. But then she survived, and it's like, it's still crap. This doesn't prove anything. Like, man, it, like, still got people like, this proves everything. Like, yo, you said, hey, if she survives, there's proof. Like, this doesn't prove anything. But, like, yeah, whatever. You know, it's fun. You know, like, that. It's good that there isn't a total acceptance of it all, as realistically there wouldn't be. But yeah, they didn't have a problem with it when they thought that she would bite it, but, you know, she thought she would just bite the dust when she drank the thing. But once she survived, now all of a sudden, it's like, oh, this test is, it's like, it doesn't mean anything. This test is nonsense. Like, her survival proves it. Like, what the heck, man? You're changing the terms of the thing because you lost? Like, what? Come on, man. Paul, and, like, she really leans into it. Like, Paul's mother, when she becomes her own mother, she really leans into it. She realizes that him being perceived as the one who will save them all and the chosen one, like, who's going to, like, lead the Fremen people, everything, is in their best interest for the people to believe that. And she wants to get as many people believing that as possible. So her becoming a Reverend Mother is going to help achieve their goal to get all the Fremen people behind Paul and, you know, get revenge on the Harkonnens and the, you know, all the stuff that happened because of that. You know, that's the best route to go for. So she's all in on that. And he is not quite so sure. Like, he's not, you know, he's reluctant. Paul in this movie is more George Washington than Space Jesus. Like, when I initially was watching this film, I'm thinking, like, oh, this is, like, basically going to be the story of, like, basically Space Jesus when you think about it. But no, it turns out this is more George Washington than Space Jesus in the fact that, according to history, Washington initially didn't want to be president. You know, he didn't want to be the first president. He thought there were other dudes who were, like, more capable for the job. And apparently, and this is just what I've heard, that his reluctance to become president and his belief to be, like, you know, his humbleness is what, you know, swayed people to be like, you know, he's definitely the guy because he doesn't want to be the guy. He thinks there are better people suited for the job. Only the guy would say that. Like, and this like Stilgar's thing, but, like, because Washington didn't want to be president and Paul doesn't want to be the leader of these people. And, like, those around him think he's just being humble, which in their eyes proves he's the one. He's more Moses than Jesus in some ways because he delivers his people from the reign of a tyrannical ruler. They cross the desert to do so. And, you know, it all gets washed away in, like, not a flood, but, like, that's technically, it's more of a swarm than a flood in the end. But like, yeah, I know it's, and there's a promise of like rain and like green a beach and all that. And it's beautiful. There's all this imagery. There's all this kind of, there's kind of, you can see it however you want to see it. You want to see Paul as Moses, you can see him kind of like that. Not really, but like, not entirely, but kind of. And, you know, one could perceive, you know, Fade, Rafa as like the Ramesses in the story, but, you know, whatever. You can see it however you want it. You could see it as, you know, this tale of space Jesus, because Paul dies and comes back. Or, you know, you can see however the story, the classic story of the one in Neo in the Matrix, or, you know, Luke in Star Wars, but, you know, better. You know, he's going to free people from the reign of a tyrannical ruler and cross to do so. We can't tell exactly how much time passes in the film, like over the course of the film, as Paul becomes accustomed to the lifestyle of a Fremen and living in the desert, essentially becoming one of them. But we know that significant time passes. Like, it could be months, you know, or years, because he's a different dude from when he left. So yeah, it could be several months. It's at the very least several months, if not years. Because over the course of the movie, his eyes go from like not blue at all to like full on blue. Whereas, like, you know, the in before him and Zendaya, actually, Zendaya's character Chani became a thing, they were like still white, but now by the end of the movie, they're like blue, blue, blue. So yeah, the movie goes from some believe in him and like some don't to like, you know, towards the end, like everybody believes. And his mother's now a Reverend Mother with plans to get everybody in the South believing he's the one. I get what they were going for when they took all the color out of the Harkonnen planet. Like, oh, this is like with a good one though, man. Like this, when the story visits the Harkonnen planet and it's to introduce the new villain of the piece. In this Harkonnen, like they sapped all, in this planet, there's no color. Everything is black, white, and gray. It is monochrome. It is so visually striking right up until Vladimir shows up looking like, and like this, this desaturation, like the lack of color here does nothing for him. It just turns him into the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Damn. Hot damn, dude. In this black and white world, you just look like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, dude. All that's missing is the little hat. Like, where's Egon in there, huh? But all that laughing goes away once Fade shows up, man. Fade is straight up menacing. A straight up menace. MC8 was called on that one. Straight up menace. And when I first saw him, he reminded me of like 2010 Randy Orton, like with the bald head. And he was just like punt kicking fools. And like, it was kind of like that. Like, Raid in this version, like, he kills for the sake of killing. Whereas before, when he was like played by Sting, it seemed, it was like he enjoyed the sport of it all, like a game hunter more than like a predator of sorts. Like, I like that he no longer has the Elvis voice. Like, Austin Butler, I like that he no longer has the Elvis voice. You know, like, he sounds almost just like Vladimir. You know, it would make sense. You know, like, they are related and everything. So it makes sense there. And, but like, dude, there's a scene where he was fighting these guys in his cage and like, no, this gladiator arena, and he kills a few of them and he realizes the last one isn't drugged up and he's like living for this shit. Like, oh, this guy's not doped up at all. Oh, this should be interesting. And he finally takes him down, but then he confronts his uncle like you didn't like dope up that last guy. Like you wanted to have me, you tried to take me out. Like, I'm like, come on, dude. Just that was a regular guy. That was just a regular dude. Did you really think, just because he wasn't doped up, that this was some huge plot to get you taken out by some ordinary citizen? Like, what the heck, man? Come on, like be real, dude. Even his uncle was like, come on, dude. Like, I just wanted to, like, make you look good, you know? Like, before, like it was kind of a known thing that these fights were fixed in a way. But, like, having the dude at the end not be doped up, like, and having, like, the whole planet witness him get taken out by Fade, and like properly defend himself and still get taken out, it showed like he's not just, you know, this planet's version of like a rich playboy. He can fight. He's merciless. He's, you know, he's bad, you know. Like, but yeah, the fireworks on the Harkonnen planet kind of look like blood drops in black and white. Like when a blood drop gets dropped on a piece of glass and it like spreads out under, and you put that under a microscope, it's, it kind of looks like that. It's unlike usual fireworks, and the flashes it produces are more like lightning, and he makes for this great shot when he's like walking down the hallway to meet Lea Sado. You know, it makes sense that everything is monochrome in the world, because like the sun is white, which like makes me wonder, like, if our sun wasn't yellow, would that affect how we see things? Like, would we even know color if everything was lit in monochrome or like any color but the one that our sun makes? And, you know, it just had me thinking, if we had a blue sun, everything would be blue with, like, the way we see color and everything changed. So many things would be different if our sun was a different color. You know, it's something to think about. Yeah. Anyway, this score is amazing. Hans Zimmer, you did it again, man. Yeah, we did it. Yeah, we did it. You did it, man. You did it. Props to you. This film score is beautiful, dude. When Paul rides the worm and, like, his theme kicks in, like, nah, it was in the first trailer, and it's like, yeah, baby, he did it. Yeah, I mean, we know he would do it, but still, man, shit, felt good. Oh, yeah, Paul rides the worm. It's this good. It really makes that moment. And when Faye takes on that last surviving Atreides in the arena, it, like, the music going on there really, like, sells them, like, what's going on, and that, like, so many things in this film is enhanced by the music. The music should enhance what's going on in the story. It shouldn't distract from it, and it shouldn't just be background noise so that the story isn't quiet. I'm looking at you, Madam Webb. Anyway, I like the contrast between the Fremen and the Harkonnen in, like, the terms of, like, their attire, because, like, the Fremen wear, like, tan and brown attire to match the desert, and, like, how they have a respect for the world they live in, as well as, like, the value of water and its life-giving properties, while the Harkonnen are dressed in, like, all black, and they use, like, fire, like, to destroy everything and, like, take. Because, the Fremen are all about giving back. Even when someone dies, like, you take the water out of their body and you give it back into, like, this pool of, like soul water, basically. And the Fremen are just about destruction and death and destroying everything, you know, so... Yeah, it was fitting to see the contrast between the two sides. Like, this is clearly evil and the, you know, the good, you know, the innocent, basically. The clearly evil and the innocent. So, yeah. So, Paul, you know, eventually gives in and he decides to take a sip of what, like, his mama took to prove that, you know, all this, he finally gave into this one business. So, he dies and comes back. Thanks to Chani. It's like that moment in Hellboy where, like, Liz is, like, by his side, and the cowboy is dying, and, like, that thing with the wings, it's like, give him a reason to come back. And, like, yeah, it's kind of like that, you know, that's what she was kind of doing, you know, like, I like that her character is given a lot more to do. She's a lot more important to the story. She's not just, like, the hero's love interest or whatever. She's her own character with her own missions and, like, things to do and beliefs. And, you know, it's pretty good, like, she's the one who brings him back. He doesn't just come back from by himself because he's the one. It's kind of like Neo when he died and it was Trinity who brought him back from the brink. So, yeah, once he comes back, he goes full Neo. Like, he's all in on, like, the idea of being the one. And he shows his power in, like, front of all the Fremen leaders. He has, like, the genetic memory of, like, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years of all these different people. He knows stuff about this planet. Like, all the people alive now don't know. Only, like, the oldest know. Like, this planet had a different name, you know? Like, this planet was called Dune. They get the most badass title drop I've ever heard in years. It's like when Paul says this one guy, like, this world that had a Fremen name, Dune. And, like, damn, roll credits, baby. That was a title card. That was a title drop right there, man. And then it's like they kick off the war. He's leading everybody now. Like, he's like, man, I ain't got a... Like, they try to tell them, like, only like, the heads of, like, you know, each of Fremen tribes can speak up at these kind of meetings. You know, you got to abide by a thing. You got to take out Stilgar if you want to be the lead. Like, and he just gets up after being things. He basically says, I ain't got to do none of that, all right? I'm the one. I'm the guy who's, I'm the one. I ain't got to do none of that. I know everything, all right? I know this planet had a different name. It used to be called Dune, all right? There's your proof that I am what I say I am. And right now, I'm the one calling the shots. Dig it? And so they dig it, and they go to war with the Sardaukar. Ha! It's glorious, man. There's all these explosions and these epic sweeping battles throughout. I mean, before they were just using guerrilla tactics to take out Harkonnen machines, but, like, now, dude, it's beautiful, man. It's like this battle was beautiful, and it's thematically fitting that the last time in the last movie, like, Gurney was at the palace, he was fighting to defend from the Harkonnens and, like, Sardaukar, and now he's returned. He's on the offensive against the Harkonnen, and they're the ones on the defensive. So that was pretty fitting. And it ends with, like, him and Batista's character fighting. And that fight is over pretty quickly, which was kind of like anticlimactic because it's like, oh man, but I get it. You know, we got a fight coming up and we don't want to like dull that fight's shine having another fight so close to it that's like also long and epic. Speaking of that fight, the sound design on that fight is amazing. The fight is pretty good. And, you know, when Fade in that other fight in the arena, when he fought the other of Atreides, he kills that guy and he tells him, "You fight well, Atreides." And then he takes him out. We get a callback to that because, like, when after he's beaten Paul, when he's getting, you know, he's about to be taken out by Paul. See, the fight is good. It's got back and forth. The hero isn't just totally untouchable. Now that he's discovered his oneness, he actually does take some, like, serious blows. But, when, you know, Paul's about to take him out, like, he's able to, like, Fade is able to say, you know, "You fight well, Atreides." And this time, it's the last time it was like a recognition, like, "Hey man, you fought well, but in the end, you know, I still got you." It's like, in this time it's flipped because it's like, "Man, I gave it everything I got, but damn it, on this day, you were the better guy. You know, you bested me." And, you know, it was just letting him know, like, "Hey, before you take me out, I want to know." Respect. There's this almost foreboding song that plays after Paul kills Freyd. Instead of this like triumphant thing with like horns, like bravo or something, it's not like that at all. You know, it's like, it's saying like, yeah, this is the end. You know, Fade is dead. Paul's taking the Emperor's ring. He's taking his daughter as marriage. It's like, yeah, we won, you know? But it's like, it's almost like a Pyrrhic victory almost, because it's like, it's not necessarily a happy tone. It acknowledges like, yeah, it's a good ending theme, but it's not a happy ending theme, because it's like, we won. But at, like, what cost? What was lost in the process, man? Like, this is an ending that doesn't necessarily mean it's good for everybody. It's a good ending, but not may not be good for everybody. So the end credits song kind of reminds me of Gladiator, though. I will say that much. And it makes sense because, you know, Hans Zimmer worked on that, too. That's not against the film or anything. It's actually a good thing. Like, it shows because these films have, like, amazingly good quality. And the sound design is amazing. And the score is amazing. Their fight scenes are good. The film is long, but it never feels long. And there's moments of levity, but also moments of seriousness where you grasp that, okay, this is like, there's no joking here. This is real. Let's get into it. And I love when, like, Paul looks at that lady. Like, he's saying something, and Charlotte Rampling tries to cut him off, and he hits with, like, a silence! And she hit him with that in the first movie. That was good, man. Like, that was good. Like, and she was kind of taken aback by, like, the sudden and, like, the raw power that he's got inside of him. So, yeah. 10 out of 10 movie, man. I give this movie a solid 10 out of 10. This is the, like, you know, it's the best 10 out... It's the most 10 out of 10 movie I've seen this year so far, you know? So, I'll give it that much. This is what this movie is. This is the most 10 out of 10 movie I've seen so far. I enjoyed pretty much every aspect of it. It succeeds in everything it seeks to do. And, you know, no character feels like a wasted character. No character feels like they could have done more. And yeah, so I really liked it. You know, 10 out of 10 for Dune 2. I can't wait to see more of the adventures of Timothée Chalamet out in the desert. And Dune Messiah is definitely a project I'm going to look forward to seeing. So yeah, this has been Moonlight Kingdom Reviews. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. We out here, man. Be sure to check out other episodes on this channel. Check out Moonlight Kingdom Podcast, as well as Fiddle in the Mode, as we cover WWE 2K22, Fallout, GTA 5, and various other games. Peace!